Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, December the 17th. Well, we're 7 days, 8 days away, 8 days away from Christmas, and 14 days, 2 weeks from the end of the year. So I'm not going to bore you with it again, but 2021 has gone by very fast. That's all I can say. Well, today we're going to look at a couple of big stories. The first one is what's happening in the Congress, the so-called Build Better Back. I think that's the name of it. It's known by the three initials BBB. It's dead in the water. It's not going to go anywhere. They just couldn't get it off the ground. And I'll get into that in a minute. But the other big story that we want to cover, I have a post at the American Thinker today talking about how Democrats have suddenly discovered crime in the city. You know how they spent all of 2020 sort of looking the other way when the cities were burning? Well, all of a sudden, they're getting pretty serious about it because this is starting to take not only a political cost on President Biden, but it's starting to hurt some of these cities economically. So, you know, it's getting pretty nasty for them. But let's talk about this bill, BBB. Those are the initials. And that stands for Build Back Better. I mean, that's a terrible name, but anyway, that's what it stands for. But anyway, the Democrats had this thing going in the House. It passed, and it passed the House, I think, on a purely partisan party vote. That right there is a problem. When something happens on a pure partisan vote or party vote, that usually means that there's going to be problems when it gets to the Senate. Because remember, in the House, you can pass something by a simple majority. In the Senate, you need 60 votes, so it just complicates things. So when I learned that this bill had passed the House on a purely party vote, then I knew that it was probably dead in the water. Now, the other thing, when it got to the Senate, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina and Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, Graham, of course, a Republican, Manchin, a Democrat, they decided to, well, they wanted to send it to the CBO. The CBO is the agency that adds up all these bills and tells you how much it's really going to cost. And the CBO report came back saying, this is going to cost a lot more than what they're telling us it's going to cost. And that killed it because Manchin said, I can't do this. But it wasn't just Manchin who killed it. It was really the American people. And this is an example of how the American people have more common sense sometimes than the people in Washington. I think Americans began flooding the telephone numbers of many of these Democrats by telling them, how are you going to pass a bill like this with like $2 or $3 trillion of spending at a time when inflation is killing our economy? And that, I think, was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think that was the point where the bill died, because you just didn't have the votes in the Congress or in the Senate to get the 60 votes. So it died. First of all, they didn't have all 50 Democrats because Senator Manchin didn't go along. So right there, they couldn't do it 50-50 with the vice president breaking the tie. So that killed it. And then the Democrats, and this is where they made some big mistakes, they really started to get cute. They tried to put in immigration, amnesty in the bill. The parliamentarian who is the person who sort of, the parliamentarian is like the referee, if you will. The parliamentarian said, no, you cannot put immigration in a bill like this. Immigration is totally separate. You have to vote for that separate. They wanted to put all these other things about the Green New Deal, climate change and all that kind of stuff. Same problem. If the Democrats want to have a vote on climate change, if they want to have a vote on immigration, they need to put up a bill by its own and put it up for negotiation and debate. You just can't take one bill and lump everything in it so that you just take one vote. And so, the Democrats, this whole thing, this whole Build Back Better, BBB, as they like to call it, was dead in the water when it got to the U.S. Senate. And that's the end of it. You can pretty much forget about it. because as we go into next year, you got a big election coming up next year, and I guarantee you, there's not going to be much appetite in 2022 in a very competitive congressional election. There's not going to be a lot of appetite for passing something of this size. So it pretty much ended, and it ended, as I said before, because the Democrats were not willing to sit down and compromise. Had they simply sat down with the Republicans and say, look, let's get this done, let's compromise, maybe they would have gotten something that Senator Manchin of West Virginia would have approved. But they didn't. They wanted to do it all their way, and of course, when you try to do that in a deeply divided country like we are living in right now, what happens is, well, you don't get what you want. And that's exactly what happened in this case. They didn't get what they want. They couldn't get the 60 votes because they simply did not have enough in this bill that the Republicans were willing to support. And again, if you try to govern by simply governing with your side, unless you have a big majority that can get a lot of things done, you're just not going to get anything done under our form of government where you need bipartisanship as much as possible. So the bill is dead. The bill is dead. It's not going anywhere. And that's the end of BBB, as they like to call it. BBB, whatever. I hate that name, BBB, but it sounds better than Build Back Better. I'll put it that way. So that's the end of it. That's pretty much the end of the Biden legislative performance, by the way. This is it. I mean, this is as far as President Biden is going to get, because as we enter into next year, it's going to be 10 times more complicated to get Democrats in an election year, particularly Democrats in competitive districts, to go along with this. So this is pretty much, in many ways, the end of the Biden legislative agenda. It's over. It's over. And next year, you know, I don't know what they're going to do next year. They want to do this voting rights, but that's not going to get through the Senate either. And so it's over, pretty much over. The Biden legislative agenda is over. It's a thing of the past. They were able to get that 1,400 per family program earlier in the year. They got that done. They've gotten a few other, you know, not controversial things done. But from this point forward, it's over for President Biden. He just simply does not have the votes, and he's entering into an election year. And nothing gets done in an election year. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Our second story tonight is that Democrats have suddenly discovered that their cities are violent. You have a bunch of Democrat mayors who are saying, we got to do something about this violence. The mayor of San Francisco came out yesterday saying, you know, we got to tackle this violence. We got to tackle our strategy. We got to go in there and stop all of this nonsense. And, of course, the most amazing part of the story is Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who lives in San Francisco. She was doing an interview, I guess a press conference, and she was like surprised that there was so much lawlessness in the streets of San Francisco. You have to ask yourself, what planet is this lady living in? Didn't she watch TV? I mean, didn't she see what's happening in her city? Of course, what is going on in these cities is that, you know, they spent much of 2020 tolerating all kinds of crazy violence, burning buildings, destroying property, and sometimes even injuring people, killing people, certainly injuring and even killing police officers. And that was a lot of fun in 2020 because they were using all that violence to create the kind of instability in the middle of the pandemic to hurt President Trump. So it was all directed at President Trump. That's all that it was. And they thought they were going to bring down President Trump by delaying the economic recovery. Of course, if you're burning cities, that's going to stop economic recovery. Well, yes, they got rid of Biden. I mean, they got rid of Trump. That's true. He did lose. And they do have Biden. But they haven't gotten rid of the main problem that they have, and that is that these cities have been destroyed. They're losing taxpayers. People are moving out. I mean, some of these cities can simply not get any investment. The taxpayers are moving out. Nobody wants to open a business in many of these cities. So now the economic cost of everything they tolerated in 2020 has come home to roost. And now they're sitting there like in San Francisco where people are moving out in huge numbers. And it's the same for most of these cities, whether it's Portland, Seattle, Milwaukee, Chicago, New York City, I mean, you name it, Los Angeles, San Francisco. The people are moving out, St. Louis. The people are moving out in huge numbers. And the businesses don't want to go to a part of the world where, I mean, you got to lock up your business every night and you know, put gates on the windows so people are not breaking in to steal your inventory like we're seeing in San Francisco. So the Democrats, I guess the good news is that they've realized just how bad their situation is. That's the good news. The bad news is that I think in many of these cities, it's probably a little too late to do anything about it. I really mean that. I think it's a little bit too late for some of these cities to do anything about it. Well, you know, it's interesting. I was invited last night, Thursday night, to speak at Univision to talk about Hispanic and Democrats. There's a lot of information coming out about the problem that the Democrat Party is having with Hispanics. They are losing the Hispanic vote. I mean, not a whole chunk. I mean, the majority is still going to go Democrat, but they're not having the margins of victory that they've had before. And these margins of victory are necessary for the Democrats to win in some states where they have competitive Senate elections and so on. So I have a post about this coming out Saturday, and we'll have a chance to talk to George Rodriguez about this over the weekend and see if both of us can talk about this topic, because this is really relevant right now. The Democrats are really worried about the Hispanic vote, and there's lots and lots of reasons why this is happening. It isn't just that the price of gasoline or what's happening on the border. I think those two issues are clearly driving if you will, the tendency toward the Republican. But there's a lot of other issues, cultural issues, where I think the Democratic Party is going too far to the left of where Hispanics are. And I think that's what their problem is. They have a bad message for Hispanics, and it's just a very interesting thing. But we're going to do a show with George before the end of the year to talk about this, because I think this could be the big news story. I mean, this could be the political story of 2020. 2021, 2022. I mean, the political story of 2022, I mean, the separation, if you will, of Hispanics and Democrats. One quick note, you know, Ukraine, Taiwan, they're both very important, and I understand the national security implications of, let's say, Russia invading Ukraine or China invading Taiwan. I understand the national security ramifications of all of this. But I do not understand why the American people have not been told about this. You know, clearly President Biden, I think, needs to go to the nation and say, look, this is why we need to defend Ukraine. This is why we need to defend Taiwan. What I fear is that this president, particularly this president, who never talks, he never gives, he's always isolated, that this president is going to have a lot of problems persuading the American people that we should send troops to these countries, or that we should be involved militarily in these countries. Obviously, if you're Putin and you're the head of China and you hear that the United States is really not going to do anything about it, well, that changes your calculation. And it encourages you to do what I don't think they would have done under President Trump. I am convinced, like, you cannot prove this, of course, but I am convinced that there is no way that Putin would have gone into Ukraine with President Trump in charge, because President Trump, I think, would have made it very, very unpleasant for him had he done that. And I'm not even talking about the military here. What I'm talking about is you have to let these people know that there are going to be consequences so severe that they shouldn't do what they're thinking about doing. It's not just a question of giving speeches or talking. You have to make it very clear to them by action, not by speeches, by canceling pipelines, for example, by making it very clear that there is going to be such a heavy price to pay that they better reconsider their action. But the American people have not been told a thing about this. And that's what really, really worries me, that there's a lot of Americans who don't even know what's going on in these countries. And that's the responsibility of the president to explain that to the American people. Well, we say happy number 86 to Pope Francis. Number 86 to the Pope. He was born, of course, in Argentina. Became the Pope, I believe, in 2010 or 2011. So happy birthday, Pope Francis. We remember today William Sapphire, who was born on this day in 1929. He died in 2009. William Sapphire was a really interesting character, especially if you like writing and reading. He had this knack for speaking the language and writing things, and it was just absolutely incredible. I think he had a column over at the New York Times. But there's a lot more to William Sapphire than these columns that he wrote in the last 30 or 40 years. He was at one time involved with the Nixon campaign, and he worked for then Vice President Nixon back in the 1950s. And you may remember something called the Kitchen Debate or something like that between then Vice President Nixon and Premier Khrushchev, where the two of them had a debate about socialism and capitalism, and they did it like in a place where there was like a kitchen. There was some kind of an exhibition, and they did it in there. And it came to be known, I think, as the Kitchen Debate. I think that's what it came to be known. Well, William Sapphire was apparently the man who thought up of the idea and prepared the whole thing, and it came out pretty good for Vice President Nixon in that experience. Well, on this day in 1991, the USSR, the old Soviet Union, ended officially on this day in 1991. The flag didn't come down, I think, until the 31st of the year, but it was on this day that they announced that it would now be Russia and not the USSR anymore. And on this day in 1903, the Wright brothers flew, and it was only 12 seconds. I mean, I didn't even realize it was that short, but 12 seconds they went up in the air, and for 12 seconds they became the first two men to fly, and that must have been one exciting 12 seconds for the Wright brothers. So we remember them today. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.